Welcome back to the Gospel Sports Juice Podcast. I am so glad you're able to join us today. We have a great show in store for you. And I'm your Jose, the Fantasy Football Fiend. And I have my guy, your guy, BK Wins. How about the people, BK?
Hey, y'all.
So, we got playoffs galore going on, NBA, NHL, moves being made, and then NFL. Like, it's just a lot of stuff going on. We'll hop right into that. Remember, you can see us on YouTube at the Gospel STP. Again, that's at the Gospel STP. And if you haven't joined the Facebook group, do that as well. That's the Gospel Sports Truths Facebook group. Type it in. You'll see the same emblem that you see on your podcast there, and join today. With that being said, let's go right ahead and hop right into it. What's the good word of the week, BK?
Sure. So the two best words in sports, game seven. There were four of them in the first round of the NBA and NHL playoffs combined. Which game seven did you enjoy most?
I would have to say I probably enjoyed... This is for selfish purposes, so I don't feel good saying it, but the Clippers going home as a Lakers fan is never a bad thing. The only better thing I can hope for is the Knicks and Celtics getting the game seven and the Celtics going home. So, yeah, I have to say the Clippers, been sit back, and that was probably the game seven that was the most fulfilling, I'll say, for me.
Yeah, so I think for me, the game seven that I enjoyed the most was the St. Louis Blues in game seven. And I say that because for those of you who missed this, the Blues were up 3-1 with 2 minutes to go in the third period and somehow found a way to blow that lead. And so
that's been a trend in the playoffs as of late.
Yes. And we'll talk more about that later, because it's definitely more than just a trend. It's like an epidemic. But that to me was, game seven, the fact that it was contested like that. You know, I understand for your point, the Clippers and liking that, but they got just beat down by the Nuggets in game seven. It really was never competitive. So this one was competitive. So that would be my pick.
Yeah, like I said, it's surely for selfish reasons. There is no icing on that cake at all. It's just surely the fact that I don't like the Clippers being a Lakers fan. That's all.
So I'm going to combine the next couple things, Zay, here. So because I realize that we're, at least a third of the way through this round of the NBA and NHL playoffs. So just to kind of do a quick little rewind first. So the Pacers up 2-0 over the top-seeded Cavaliers. They swept both games in Cleveland. The Knicks also did the same, taking both games from the Celtics. The defending champs now go on the road down 2-0. In the Western Conference, Golden State took game one in impressive fashion, winning by 11, although Steph Curry's injury and being out for a week at least already seems to be causing the Warriors trouble. And then in the other one, the top-seeded Thunder, after losing a nail-biter in game one, absolutely destroyed the Nuggets in game two to level that series. I guess for me, two things. What are you looking for in this round, the second round of the NBA playoffs, Zay? And the second part is, which NBA favorite is most on upset alert in your mind?
Well, for me, let me start with the second question. There's only one NBA team who's a favorite that's on the ropes, and that's the Celtics. And when I say that, I understand that, I understand the Indy situation. I understand maybe the Cavs. I'll say the Cavs are, that's pretty close in alignment with the Celtics type situation. But we talked about it on the previous show. The Cavs did it in the regular season. OKC got their comeuppance last offseason. There's certain teams that the Celtics are always in the mix. So there's certain teams that you expect to have hiccups. And then there are other teams that it's just like, where did that come from? Indy made it to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. So they're not new to this, if that makes sense. They're almost a Miami of the Midwest type of a feel. And Haliburton is their version of Jimmy Butler from past seasons. So I kind of feel like the Celtics would be the only true upset because, you know, the moniker from us old school wrestling fans, you know, to be the man, you got to beat the man. The Cavs has never been the man. No one crowns you the man because of what you do in the regular season, no matter how great it is. So I don't really feel like Indy's, quote unquote, beating the man. On the other hand, what the Knicks are doing, that's different. They're a team that got sent home last year by Indy, didn't make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, and now they're up 2-0 on who most would believe to be the overall number one seed if we were to look at it from that perspective. When looking at talent combined with experience, I know OKC has the better record and all that kind of good stuff, but again, playoffs are a different animal, and the Celtics, probably based on the Celtics in Denver, have the most playoff experience. Well, and Golden State's still in there too, but there are only a few with true playoff experience. When Steph is on the bench, that takes away a huge chunk of what Golden State has going. So the Celtics would be the team that I think I would be most surprised if they didn't figure out a way to make it shake. What I'm looking most forward to, I'm actually looking most forward to seeing who's going to have fight in. How many game sevens are we going to have? How many teams are just going to lay it down due to, you know, this situation or circumstance? That's going to be the thing that I think can really make this NBA postseason a lot more tolerable than years past when we kind of knew what was going to happen and we were just waiting on the finals.
Yeah, so I think for me the answer is also the Celtics because they're the defending champs and I think they had the easier matchup going into this. But the Celtics had home court, they have the better roster, they have the experience, they have the depth. Everything was aligned for them to take care of business. The Cavs obviously had home court, the best record in the regular season. But the Pacers are a tougher matchup, not only stylistic, because they go up and down the floor, they make you defend. But the reason why I would have had the Cavs, but believe it is the Celtics, is I mentioned this numerous times, and I hate that it keeps happening, but what's been the biggest storyline of the NBA playoffs so far again? It's injuries. Steph Curry's out, you know, that could potentially change the series. You know, the Cavs were without Garland for games 3 and 4 against Miami, which didn't matter, but he's already missed the first two games against Indiana, which does. And on top of that, they didn't have Mobley or Hunter. How many playoff teams are going to win in the second round of the playoffs without three of their four best players? And Mitchell was phenomenal. The guy had 48 in game two. No, you couldn't ask for a player to do more than he did. And you know, but you're missing three of your second, third, and fourth best player against a competent team. I just can't call that an upset because that's a tough. That's it. If the Cavs were at full strength and losing, I would say that's an upset. Missing your second, third, and fourth best player, I can't say that that's surprising.
And BK, let me throw the ball a little bit further in your court. Indy was with those starters from the Cavs being out, Indy was getting 5.5 points. I took it and ran like a baby. Like I didn't understand the logic behind it. At first, I thought it was a fool's errand. But I'm like, what am I missing? Like they're missing three of their best players, and you're giving the other team who has all of their players close to 6 points. Like yeah, I'll take that. And like I thought I was in the Matrix or something, or like some type of did they not just beat this team a game before? And now three of the, like, what are we, what? So yeah, cleaned up on that one, but
yeah,
I didn't understand it.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, when you look at these lines, it just seems way too good to be true. Like, what am I missing what are we missing that but yeah, it's funny because I took the Pacers in games one and two with the points. And the first one, there, the book that I used, it had the Pacers plus 10 in game one.
Wow.
Okay. And I'm like, and you know, I shook my head. And in game one with the Wolves and the Warriors were getting 7 with that defense and Steph and Butler. How, like, 7? Really? Like,
I clean up on that one too. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Those two just stood out to me. I felt like it again, could have been a fool's errand, but I'm just like, what am I missing? Like, this does not make sense.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Last but not least, in the good word of the week, you know, the NHL second round of the playoffs, there's 4 matchups, the defending champion, the defending cup champs, the Panthers trail the Maple Leafs 2-0. The Canes and the Caps are doing battle tonight as we speak. Game 2, Canes up 1-0. They've taken home ice away from Washington. In the other series, the defending Western Conference champion, the Edmonton Oilers, stole home ice from the Golden Knights. They're up 1-0. And the Stars upset the President Cup Trophy winner, the Winnipeg Jets. The Stars up 1-0 in that series. Of these 4 series, A, which of these 4 most excite you?
Oilers Knights. That probably shouldn't be the one that excites me the most because they're probably the 2 teams that I know the least about. But the Knights just came in and they never knew they were supposed to suck as a new team. Like they just came in and went on a ramp. Like they've never not been bad. I mean, they've never not been good from day one. Like that doesn't happen with expansion teams in most sports. So, and then you have the, you know, oldie but goodie with the other side of the spectrum, the Oilers, who've been around forever. And it just, I like the structure of their strengths and weaknesses to make for a very competitive game. And I also feel like this series will be the one that I'm most intrigued by because it's the one that's most difficult for me to say in my own mind's eye who's going to win. The others, I'll throw out a name quick. This one, I wasn't expecting the Oilers to take home. Like that wasn't supposed to happen in my humble opinion. But at the same time, I know enough about the Knights to know that they're comfortable being uncomfortable. So this won't have the effect on them that it could have had on several other teams. So I don't know. That's the series that I would say that I'm most looking forward to. Same page? Do you look at it differently? What do you got?
Yeah, so for me, I agree with you because while I don't have a favorite hockey team, if you were to make me pick one that I follow, it's Vegas. Because not only I love their pregame show with it's like a spectacle to watch the pregame before they even play. And then the way they play, the style is fun to watch. And what was disappointing in game one is they controlled the first period. They were up 2-0 early on. They were up 2-1 after the first period. But Edmonton does or did what they've done the entire postseason, which is not show up in the first quarter, period. Sorry, my bad. Not show up in the first period. And then they just take over in periods 2 and 3. And it's what they did in game one. I expect a much different effort from an outcome from Vegas tonight, because they can't afford to go to Edmonton down 2-0. That is not the place you want to be. So, but yeah, for me, that little biased here, but that's the one that I enjoy the most.
Can't argue with you there, my guy. Time for our truth and nothing but the truth. First up, postseason collapses. Why have there been so many epic collapses this postseason? It's interesting because you have on one hand, some teams have had injuries. That's a respectable reason to collapse. But then you have other situations where it's just like you can't put a finger on it, but it just feels like it's going to happen again after it happened the first time. So, like with the Cavs, for instance, due to injury, they lost a very competitive game that they had three of their better players. I would be comfortable saying they probably would have won that game. But if it's a fifth, we'd all be drunk. So it is what it is. There are going to be injuries, and when they happen, they happen. As far as the Celtics are concerned, they're a lot more alarming because the only people that are hurt are the people that you kind of plan to be hurt. Every one of your better players is available for you. So I don't know if this is a coaching mishap. Tatum needs to stop shooting threes, but the coach needs to tell him that. So chicken or the egg, what? I don't know what's going on. You can obviously whip this team. You go up, and then it's like you forget that you still have to continue to play. Like, would they be better off never going up by a significant amount? Like, I know that's crazy to say, but would they be more likely to win if it was close all the way through instead of having the comfortability of going up by 20 points, which most teams would be happy about? But that seems to be the Achilles heel of the Celtics. So I just, it's interesting. That's all I can say. It's very much interesting. And then you have some of the same thing going on the NHL side of the house. So it's like it's something in the water. Like what is going on right now? What you got on that?
So I think it's a combination of things, right? Like, for the Cavs, I've heard a lot of different things. People blame the officiating. People blame the injuries. And all of those things are possible or plausible. But, at the end of the day, the Cavs were up 7 with 45 seconds to go. That got to be a win. And you're up 14 heading into the fourth quarter. Like, that should be a win. And, you look at the Bucks, they blew their collapse. And the Celtics, they shot 15 for 60 in game one. I'll say that again. 15 for 60 in game one. That's absolute. You miss 45 threes and you're in a one possession game. That's crazy. And then the second part is in game two, they shot 9 for 38, which is another terrible shooting performance. The Cavs and the Celtics live and die by the threes. And in college, they say you're one bad shooting half from going home for the season. Basically, your tournament ending with one bad shooting half. Well, a bad shooting half or a game in the NBA, in the playoffs, that can swing a series. And the thing that's hurting the Cavs are missing their second, third, and fourth best player. And the fact that the Pacers are pushing pace and making clutch shots. But the other part of it is for Boston, Porzingis was not feeling well in game one. And he's been a zero in both game one and game two. Tatum and Brown need help. Like they
can't. Yeah, I give them no pass for Porzingis because that's the guy that you should have been planning to be hurt. So I mean,
what I'm saying is if the guy's getting 4 points and 0 points, you're paying him way too much money to be a no-show. Like, and I mean, in game two, and I might be a little off on the stats, so my apologies to good people out there, but I think Tatum had 13 points and 14 assists in game two. If Tatum's scoring 13, that's not getting it done. I mean, there's, and even with the awful shooting and Porzingis being a zero and Tatum not scoring points, they still only lost by one. And you know why they lost the first two games? Because the man who was voted the most clutch player in the NBA this season, Jalen Brunson, closes out games. He did it against the Pacers, and he was money in the first two games. And when it matters most, while he's the third best player on the court in terms of talent, when it's mattered most, he's been by far the best player. And the Knicks are 2-0.
And that, my friend, can't be denied. Right now, Brunson might be the hottest player in the playoffs. And this doesn't hurt as much as recent moves, but Dallas Mavericks fans got to be punching air because Brunson is the reason that the Knicks are doing what they're doing. And you had him and Luka Doncic under the same roof. And you let him go first, didn't realizing that he was the heart of the team. And when he left, Luka Doncic couldn't carry the load on his back by itself. So I find it interesting that teams that make certain mistakes seem to compound those mistakes by making the same mistake again. So,
no, agree.
Just an observation. Nothing to do with that part of the show, but moving right along.
I mean, no, it's true. So, going to the next part of the truth. So, let's talk about Road Warriors and is there a home court disadvantage? And I'm going to rephrase this question a little bit based on some updated results. So home teams are 1-6 going into tonight's game with Minnesota and Golden State. 1-6. The only team to get a win was OKC's beatdown of the Nuggets in game two. And that was over quick. In the NHL, the Maple Leafs are 2-0 at home. The other home teams are 0-3, not counting the Washington Carolina Hurricanes because it was underway while we were recording. So no outcome, final outcome. My question to you is, why do you think there's this Road Warrior success, which is not normal this late in the playoff?
It again comes from experience in some cases versus lack of experience. For some teams, whether you're at home or on the road, it's uncomfortable or different, I guess would be a better term. And there's a lot less to focus on when you're not at home versus when you are. You don't have to worry about, you know, got to make sure, you know, mama and all of them taken care of and got their tickets and, you know, everybody's wanting to talk and this, that, and the third, or whatever the case may be, versus it being a basketball court and a hotel room and nothing in between. So there's something to be said, especially for younger or less experienced team, having less distractions on the road than they do at home. That's really the only thing that I can see kind of giving any type of an advantage where there normally is a disadvantage. That's really the only thing that I can come up with that makes any sense. Not that that is correct, but it's plausible based on current standings, I'll say.
No, I think that's definitely fair. I think the other thing too is there's a lot more pressure when you're at home. You know, you have to. They always say in the postseason that a playoff series doesn't truly start until the home team loses. So you don't want to lose and give up home court or home ice, or even in the NFL or whatever, home field. Like, you don't want to do that, right? So there's pressure to get off to a good start. And I'll use, for example, both Cleveland and Boston. Those cities have rabid fan bases when it comes to basketball. Like, there's pressure to deliver. And, you know, in Cleveland's case, outside of the championship year, you know, the Cavs have suffered a lot of tough losses in the playoffs. It's almost like the here we go again syndrome. Now, Boston's not had that issue. I mean, they won the title last year, so they're not having that kind of experience or issue overall. But there's pressure to win. And again, especially against another big rival like the Knicks, like, you don't want to lose. And then to lose two in a row in the way they lost, right? They lost at home. They were up 20 in the second half of game three. They were up 12 in the second half of game four. To lose those is like, that's a problem, right? And now they got to go on the road, staying with the Cavs. Who's going to play for the Cavs in game three? And it's a must-win game. So nobody knows who's playing, and they have to have a game. Like, does that sound like a bargain to you?
For the Cavs, it kind of feels, to your point, like a here we go again. It's a same dance, same song. At some point in time, inevitably, the wheels fall off. And this time, it's not due to not having a good enough team. It's literally the wheels falling off. Like, you couldn't ask for a worse way to end a season if you're the Cavs. After the success that you had, like, and don't hear what I'm not saying, because they aren't, no one has been deemed as being out for the season or anything like that yet. Two out of three may be back this coming game. Who knows? We don't know yet. But if they are not to win this series, you hate for it to be due to injury. If you fall on your sword and you lose the good fight, cool. But making it this far and having this much of a magical season, and then essentially saying, well, let's try again next year without having the opportunity to really go for the gusto this year, that's a bit of a gut punch. So I hope things kind of turn around in that situation more than anything else.
The toughest thing in sports, A, is, you know, as a competitor, if somebody's better than you, even though you don't like losing, you can accept when someone's just better than you. Like, sometimes yep. you're just outclassed and you know it and it sucks, but it is what it is. But in the Cavs' case, when healthy, they're the more talented team. They're the team that should win the series. But unfortunately, you know, the Cavs are going to could potentially have to spend the offseason, if things don't quickly change, about what is and that injuries, like feeling snake bit, that like injuries got them, not another team. And that's the thing, is you want to be able to show your best basketball and play it and not.
Real quick, BK, breaking. Now, I know this will be old to when you guys listen, but Anthony Edwards was just helped off of the court with an apparent ankle injury. That can definitely, talking about injury, now, that for me just evens that series. Ant's going, Steph's going, nobody can play and keep playing. Like, we don't know, now, Ant's just out of this game being helped to the locker room. We don't know if they're going to give him a quick shot, retape him up, and he's back out there, or if he's out for the rest of the game. So, ears to the ground on that situation. But worst-case scenario, I think it actually makes the series interesting again versus if Steph just can't go and Minnesota's at their full complement. Didn't feel too good about the outcome of that situation. So, a little bit more intriguing.
To your point, though, is – you know, Steph's going to probably miss, if he's out a week, which was the minimum they said, that's games 2, 3,
minimum
and 4.
Minimum for 3 games.
Yeah, and at halftime tonight, they were down 17, 48-31. So, you know, they were getting, you know, booked in Minnesota tonight. So, with Edwards being out, then that definitely is an equalizer, and it's kind of like a race to see who will be back first. you know, now Edwards could come back in the second half. We don't know, you know, like how the extent of it, but if he misses any significant time, much like Curry, it changes the series, you know? And so, yeah.
Well, if he's out there and he is injured, but still trying to play, and now instead of running it through a healthy player, he's trying to go out there and be Superman, that ain't gonna work either. So,
no, it won't. No, that's a great call for sure. Well, it was sad bit of news in the NBA this week is the Spurs.
Wait, okay. One more thing. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Apparently, Draymond Green hit Naz Reid in the face, and he's now two technicals away from a playoff suspension. So the Warriors got to deal with that, too.
It's a tradition like any other. It's Draymond getting thrown out in the NBA.
Getting suspended in the playoffs has now become a habit, and that's not good on your resume. Like, that's just, at some point in time, you got to understand the moment, and especially when Steph is out. Like, bruh, they don't have a team if you're not out there. Like, what are you doing right now?
Well, that's the thing is, you know, at work, we talk about emotional intelligence all the time. And from a basketball IQ, Draymond Green is off the charts how smart he is on the court.
Agreed.
But these are the kind of things that you can't do. You're up a game in the series. You know, you got your star player Steph out. You can't afford to take yourself out of the game. Just can't happen.
Especially when your coach refuses to play Kuminga. So, I mean, like, you can't have both things happen. Like,
I mean, in fairness, I can't blame Kerr the way I watched Kuminga play. I don't think he could shoot a ball in an ocean. So,
he's a warm body. That's what they need right now.
Listen, someone's got to get Jimmy Buckets some water and Gatorade. So, you know.
Jimmy Buckets is still there. Playoff Jimmy is still a thing. You're right.
He better be playoff Jimmy if they want to advance if Steph's out a week. I'm just saying.
Yep.
But, so, with the sad news this week, Spurs legendary head coach Greg Popovich has retired. My question to you, Zay, is, of these three head coaches, or if you think another one is better, which of these do you consider the head coaching GOAT in the NBA? Phil Jackson, Red Auerbach, or Coach Pop?
For me, it's pretty easy on this one. I got to roll with Phil. For Phil to be able to keep those two teams together as long as he did with those egos and attitudes and whatever else you want to paint in those championship rooms, a lot of that was him. Pop, his GMs helped him out a lot because his best players were always, quote unquote, gentlemen. He really didn't have any egos and attitudes in his locker rooms, like, or at least none that would disrupt the team if he wasn't there. Excellent coach, but so it's not really the comparison. And Red, the same thing. Obviously, he has a ton of championships. But I don't know enough about that era to know what those locker rooms were like and what it would have taken for a coach to keep that squad together. So I got to go with what I know. Phil had to be up many late nights thinking about, praying about, tossing and turning about, and still making a shape. So I'll go that direction there. But there's very little separation.
Yeah, I think this is an easy one. It's Phil. He's won 11 titles, three different three-peats, two of them with the Bulls and one with the Lakers. So, you know, Auerbach was second in titles with 9, you know, but I wasn't watching his team's play back then. So I'm not going to foolishly pass judgment or give a take on something that I was not part of at all, other than there were a lot less teams, which makes it easier to navigate. But And then Pop, yeah, he won five titles and he was terrific. I mean, absolutely terrific head coach. But if he's got five and there's two guys that are almost or actually double him, it's hard to put him past. So for me, it's Phil. The 11 titles stand alone.
Gotta agree. This last topic, BK?
Yes.
Kobe called it years ago, but it's been interesting just watching it unfold. But has there been a bigger NBA star who disappears when it matters the most in the playoffs, other than James Harden? I'm hard pressed to find one. Booker, he's not in the same, I wouldn't put him in the same category, but there aren't very many. His style isn't sustainable when teams key in on you on defense, which is what happens in the playoffs. And it's just not going to work.
No, I think the answer very simply is no. There's never been anyone that's worse than him, that's a mega star. And I'll give you just some numbers to back that up. In his last 13 elimination games, Harden's teams have gone 2-11. And prior to his 28-point effort in the Clippers' Game 6 win over Denver, Harden hadn't won an elimination game since the bubble in 2020. And if you remove that 28 points in Game 6 versus Denver, he scored 7 points in Game 7 versus Denver in Game 7, 16 points against Dallas in 2024, and 9 points versus Boston in 2023, 11 points versus Miami in 2022. And even when they won in 2020 versus OKC, he was 4 for 15 from the field, including a dreadful 1 for 9 from distance. Does that sound like a guy to you that's clutch? And what's crazy is the Sixers won against Boston. He literally scored 45 and I think 41 the first two games and then no-showed after that.
That's what he does. I mean, it's a very fascinating conundrum, if you will, because he's one of the most special offensive players I think I've ever seen, just to give him his flowers. While at the same time, it is baffling how much you can't depend on him when it matters the most. And I don't know if it's causation, correlation, or no relation. And it is what it is, but it happens over and over and over again. And because of how many times it's happened, I don't believe he can increase his cachet any longer as it pertains to, you know, what he ranks among the Pantheon NBA players. Although I do believe that he will still be considered to be an all-time great based on his offensive prowess. And I believe he'll still get into the Hall as well, but there'll just never be any, I won't say never be, there'll be quite fewer debates on his status as a great in comparison to other, in comparison to his contemporaries. So I don't get it. It's almost as likely for him to not show up in the playoffs as it is for your boy Kawhi Leonard to get injured at some point in the season. It's like it's death and taxes. Like it's almost that automatic at this point.
Well, whether it's playing sports, watching sports, or even at work, one of the most important things is consistency and being able to trust the people you work with or your teammates. There's nobody on any team that can trust Harden to deliver in elimination game. He's proven time and time again that he shrivels up when it matters most. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't take any joy or pride in saying that, but it's the nature of, I mean, those are the facts. He plays not well when it matters. And, like, that's a problem. And it's something that you don't just get to live down or wipe away, you know? Like, it's there. It's like an albatross. You've got it.
You're right. And there's, I mean, and the worst part about it is he could go to the finals next year. Unless you win a championship, it doesn't change what you built. It doesn't change everything else that is going wrong. So his career is what it is right now. And I think that about wraps up the truth. And we get to move on to our top five all time of something. That being this week, quarterbacks. And BK, I believe that this list will be a lot more lockstep than most, because some things are just solidified right now, in my humble opinion, in the NFL. But we'll see how closely our lists resemble each other. With that being said, who you got first?
Well, in honor of you, good buddy, I have an honorable mention.
Okay. So you're going to start with the honorable mention instead of ending with it. Okay, I like it. I like it.
Honorable mention, Dan the Man Marino.
Okay.
I think he is an all-time great quarterback, but these other five just have done a little bit more and are a little bit above where he is, especially given the lack of titles. And no Super Bowl appearances after his rookie year against San Francisco. So I have him as honorable mention. My number five, you know, there's the right way, there's the wrong way, and then there's the Elway. So John Elway on my list, number five.
Well, BK, you know there's always some type of shenanigans when we get to this part of the show on my part. So with that being said, my number five quarterback of all time, it's Tom Brady. Tampa Bay Tom Brady, to be exact. What's your number four, BK?
I would love to say that I'm surprised, but just when I thought I've seen everything, you told me, wait, hold my beer, and here it is. Number.
Just saying. I got to put Tampa Bay Tom Brady over Dan Marino. I'm just saying.
I hear you. Number four, we're going to continue the path of another former Bronco. Give me Peyton Manning, number four.
Okay.
He's a cerebral assassin, multiple Super Bowl title winner, broke a lot of different records. Terrific player, both at Indy and in Denver. But his ability to process information from the quarterback position is truly spectacular. I have him number four. Who you got?
I agree. But it's actually why I have him at number three. And I have Patrick Mahomes at number four. When you gave an old Peyton Manning a decent defense, he won a Super Bowl. If Indy had had half as much talent on defense as they had on offense, if Peyton Manning had been a Patriot and Tom Brady had been a Colt, I think they would have both had similar careers as to what the opposite ended up with. You give Peyton the defense that Tom had all those years and a defensive head coach, because he's going to take care of the offense for you, essentially, no different than Tom Brady. But I got to give the edge to Peyton there as my number three, and Patty is my number four. And this is with the slightest of, like, by week four of next year, Patty may be number three. Like it's the slightest. Just saying.
Well,
what you got next?
My number three is Mr. Patrick Mahomes. He's already been amazing. 7 straight AFC title games, 3-time Super Bowl champion. I have him as my number 3. Who you got as number 2?
Number 2 for me. Used to be number 1 for many years. Joe Cool. Joe Montana. Number 2.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about another show a few months ago about, you know, has Mahomes caught Montana for number 2 all time? I made the argument when we talked about it that I think that Montana's 4-0 in Super Bowls. He won, you know, he's been to 4. He won them all. He still won ahead of Mahomes in the win column, 4-3. So I just feel like Montana, especially some of those clutch drives he had, the one to beat the Bengals really stands out when he hit John Taylor for that touchdown. I like Montana, Joe Cool, number 2.
And there's obviously only one answer for number 1. So, yeah. New England, Tom Brady. Obviously.
I think that was the easiest number 1 we've ever done.
Like, at this point, if you feel that there's an argument, I got to label you a hater. Like there is no argument. Like, there just isn't. And that pretty much wraps up. Oh, BK, you about to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I agree. Like, Tom Brady is by far heads and shoulders number 1. But I would listen to an argument with Mahomes and Montana, even though I think Montana has the edge at this point. But if you wanted to make the argument of Mahomes, I would at least listen to it. I just don't think that ultimately he's done enough yet to supplant Montana.
Agreed. That wraps up our top 5 all-time of something for this week's quarterbacks. And now, the money-making part of the show, BK's best bets. What we got this week, BK?
Well, I'm going to do something that a lot of you guys don't like when I do when it comes to making money. But we're going to kick the can to next week. I was looking at some matchups, and, you know, you and I talked about earlier in the show about we were on the Pacers this series in individual games. You know, we had the Warriors in game 1 as well. You know, but some of these lines are so big. You know, like the Wolves tonight were minus 11. The Cavs in games 1 and 2 were 10 and 9. Like, that was, you know, it was 9 in game 2 before the two play, Hunter and Mobley were ruled out. But, you know, those are big numbers. Oklahoma City's giving a lot to Denver, you know. So when you're laying 10 points in the postseason, it's hard to really back that and feel good about it. And we've already seen Boston be a 10.5 point favorite in games 1 and 2, and they're 0-2 straight up. So, you know, it's just hard to get that. In hockey, these series, so many games are one-score games, one-goal games, and these series are all so close. You know, like the Canes and the Capitals are very competitive teams. They're very close. You know, Jets and Stars, same deal. Oilers and Knights, that one. And, you know, I mean, even the Leafs and the Panthers, I would have thought that one would have been an easier series because Florida is the more talented team. And Toronto said, yeah, no thanks, we're up 2-0. So, you know, it's just, we're just going to have to wait and go. And even I looked at game 3, the Cavs were opened as a 1.5-point road favorite against Indiana in a must-win game. They're up to a 3-point favorite this afternoon. I don't know if that means maybe one of their couple players are coming back, but still, do you really trust that bet on the road? Like, I don't know who's playing for the Cavs. I don't know how long they're going to play if they play. You know, I don't know how well the Pacers are going to play, even though I expect them to be, you know, on fire in a jacked up home court situation, but I just don't know. So we're going to wait till next week.
I think the safest bet this week, Boston money line. I can't in my mind see Boston going down 0-3. Not saying that it couldn't happen, but for my money, that's the safest. Not saying it's going to make you much, because I have no idea what that's going to look like as far as what you got to lay down to get. But I cannot see them going down 0-3. I can't. That's not a BK's best bet. That's a Zane's common sense bet. But depending on how much you got to lay down on it, it still don't make sense in the sense of betting. But yeah.
Well,
and I'll let BK explain that a little bit better than us.
No, you did well. So I think just going back to the Boston situation, obviously besides shoot the ball a lot better, I don't really know what the Celtics are going to do here, because, you know, they were at home. They blew a 20-point lead in game one, 12-point lead in game two. Porzingis has been a zero, we talked about. Tatum, 13 points, 14 boards. But he's scoring 13. It's going to be hard to win. And, you know, Jaylen Brown and Tatum have to get going. But the guy who can really help them the most is Derek White. Like, he can knock down threes. He's athletic. He's a really good player. He's a hell of a player. Like, they need a third piece to help get them through this round, because the Knicks have them figured out. Their game plan is great. Unless injuries happen to them, I don't see how the Celtics are going to overcome that unless they get somebody else, whether it's Porzingis, Derek White. They need some other third scoring option if they're going to win.
But BK, you just said they were up by 20. They don't need more scoring. They need more defense. You scored a plenty. Stop the other team from scoring, and you'll be okay. That's why I say this is a situation where they would literally be better off in a nail-biter from stem to stern, first quarter through fourth quarter, than becoming comfortable. They don't know how to become comfortable with being ahead and then fire it back up because the other team came back. Like, they don't have that switch. And that's normally a coaching thing. Like, but that's what it feels like. Like you up by 20, you're scoring a plenty. And if you took the ball to the post instead of shooting up all, jacking up all these threes, you wouldn't have to worry about Tatum having off nights, because he can at least get to the free throw line if he tries to get to the post. He did the same thing season before last. When they got booted, he kept doing all these mid-range three-point shooting instead of going to the post and getting the other team in foul trouble. So when your shot's off, switch it up. Go to the post. Go to the hole. But they want to keep jacking up these shots. And apparently their coach isn't brave enough to tell them to knock it off. And that, my friends, was my can't-miss weekly rant.
I love what you did there.
It's time. That just worked out perfectly. So I don't have to ask if you want me to go first this week.
No, for the first time ever, you decided to never mind. I'm just going to take it. But as I learned in the movie The Replacement, winners want the ball.
Hey, when it's rolling, you just roll.
Well, my can't miss weekly rant is I have a little something to say for Cleveland fans. So, I understand that, first of all, I understand why you're disappointed that you're down 2-0 when you won 64 games and you had the top seed in the Eastern Conference and you expected to beat the Pacers and move to the conference finals and likely get the Celtics. I understand all that, and I can appreciate that. But please stop with the whining and bitching about the refs. Yes, we all saw the NBA report that they missed two lane violations that cost the Cavs. Here's the thing. They had a 7-point lead with 45 seconds to go. Okay? They were up 14 after three quarters. If you can't win up 14 after three quarters, like, I'm not sure what the refs didn't blow the 14-point lead. Did they not play defense the whole fourth quarter? Did they struggle to score points and get good shots outside of Donovan Mitchell? The truth is, nobody could score other than Mitchell. And he was amazing. He was everything you could ask for your star player to be. Stop blaming the refs. Losers blame the refs. Winners find a way to win.
And that's what BK's dad says, just so you know.
Yes. And my dad says this all the time. Stop blaming the refs. I understand that they miss calls. I'm going to repeat what I said because I want to make sure that I read 36 comments from people in Cleveland about why it's the refs' fault. And how it's fixed and they wanted the Pacers to win and everyone's against Cleveland. Okay, well, the refs didn't control the injuries, nor did the Pacers. Now, you could say, according to Atkinson, that the play was excessive, by not dirty or intentional, but the Pacers' play was excessive for what was needed. And I'm quoting the Cavs head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. I know you're not used to being in this position in a non-LeBron-led team. You're not used to being in this position. It's been a long time. Late 80s, early 90s with Doherty, Nance, Hot Rod Williams, Price, and Elo, and all of that. Okay? I need you guys to focus on what you can do. Here's your pep talk. It's us against the world. Focus on what you need to. Execute your offense. Someone needs to help Mitchell so he doesn't have to score 50 for you to try to win. Number three, stop blaming the refs and play physical. You can win this series, but you've got to control what you can control and stop blaming things that don't matter. You're never going to win that argument with the refs, and all you're going to do is piss them off, so that's not going to help you either. So, fans, cheer on your team. I know it sucked because of the injuries, but you have to win four games, not two. It's a long series. You have a chance to save your season tomorrow, Friday night. Make it count.
And that, my friends, wraps up the show for this week. We will be right back to you with the Fantasy Football Show on Wednesday. Remember, always tell the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
We out.
Later, y'all.